Okay, this is Greek Club, and I'm Josh Hayes filling in for Dr. Gibbs. So this may be more of a team effort today, especially now that we have Lessing in the room. And Will, yeah, I was elected to fill the role, I don't know why, but I do have almost a master's in Greek, so I know something, but not a lot. I'm really more of a Latinist. We are in 2 Corinthians, picking up at chapter 3, verse 4. That's what I was told. And this is where, if you back up to chapter 2, verse 16, at the end of the verse there, Paul first raises the question, Kai pros tauta tis hikanos, who is sufficient, who is good enough for these things? And then he launches into, he sort of previews that thought. He goes into this self-defense at the beginning of chapter 3, saying, you know, am I, you know, tooting my own horn again, or do I need letters of recommendation for myself? And now in verse 4 and really verse 5, he's going to return to this idea of hikanos, sufficiency for the apostolic task. So verse 4, pepoithesin de toyautein echomen dia tu Christu proston theon. Now, I'm going to keep it pretty basic today. I think if you're new in your Greek, you might look at that first word and you see that pep. It's got that duplication on the front that is so common to perfect verbs. It's got that theta eta in it, which is so common to aorist passive. So you might be guessing at what kind of verb this is, but it's not a verb form, actually. That is not a verb ending. It's just a noun that means confidence or even boldness. But here I think we wanted to go with confidence. So the main verb is our usual friend, echomen. But, or you could translate now, we have such confidence through Christ towards God or in God. Such confidence. And that toi autein there is probably referring to the paragraph preceding, saying where he said that he didn't need letters of recommendation, but he had confidence that they themselves, the Corinthians, commended him. Verse 5, any questions on that verse? Pretty straightforward. Verse 5, Uk hate apheauton hikanoi es men logidzasthai te hos ex heauton alhe hikanates hemon ektu theu. We should take verse 6 too. Hos kai hikanosen hemas diakonus kaines diathekes u grammatas ala pneumatas. Verse 5, we start off with the hati clause, which is going to explain more of his argument, more of why he has confidence. Not because esmen hikanoi, we are sufficient apheauton from ourselves. Now we're going to get this infinitive. So just like in English, we'd say you're sufficient for something or to do something. In Greek, uses the same construction. Sufficient to logidzasthai, that is an aorist infinitive middle. Sufficient to, and this is from our friend logizomai, so you would expect it to be middle since it's deponent in the first principal part. To account, reckon, consider something, hos, as coming from ourselves, ex auton. But our sufficiency, so this is the abstract form of the adjective hikanos, but our sufficiency is from God, who, even or also, sufficiencied us, to put it woodenly, made us sufficient as deacons, ministers of a new covenant. Now, in English, English does things really neatly because we use word order, right? So we can take nouns and use them as verbs. A great example of this is text, right? Text is a noun, but these days, text is also a verb. I'm going to text you, or, you know, he texted me yesterday. Well, Greek, you know, doesn't do this by word order, but by using noun ending. So you take the adjective hikanos, and you just make it like a verb, hikanosin. So now it's a verb. God sufficiencied us, made us sufficient. And that would be an aorist. Your clue there is the sigma. And then as, this is a double accusative construction. So just like if you make something else, you use two accusatives. So God made us sufficient as, is the word we use to translate it, as ministers of a new covenant. Now what kind of, I would be remiss if I didn't ask this because Gibbs would, what kind of genitive are we talking about with ministers of a new covenant? What are our options, at least?
Subjective, objective.
Okay, it could be subjective. So what would it be if it were, how would you make meaning of that if it were subjective? So if we're serving the new covenant, that would be objective, right? Because covenant would be the object. And I think that's the way to go. And this is really the normal way that these diaconia-related nouns and verbs work. I think it sometimes they might go the other way. A good book for this, if anybody's really interested in the word diaconia, is a book by John Collins. I don't remember the title. And he really gets into what is a diakonos, and is everyone a diakonos, or is just Paul, or the apostles, or pastors. It's an interesting discussion. But it normally means to dish something out. So if you went to a restaurant, your server would be your diakonos, because they go into the kitchen and they bring it out. And that's what Paul is saying here, that he is a diakonos of a new covenant. So he didn't make the new covenant. The new covenant doesn't originate with him, but he's dishing it out, as it were. And then we get two more genitives. U grammatos ala pneumatos. You want to take a stab at these genitives, Will? What kind of genitives are we talking about? Yeah, and the way that I think the term for that is exegetical. That's sort of it's the fun one to say anyway. So they just kind of, I think you could argue that they're genitives of something else, but I think exegetical, they just further describe what this new covenant is about. So they're describing the new covenant. You could argue that there are still genitives hanging off of diakonos. So Paul would be not dishing out the letter, but the spirit. But I tend to, maybe for theological reasons, take them with covenant. And then the end of verse 6 now. Tagar gramma apoktene tada pneuma zoopoie. For, giving further explanation for why these Why the letter? Why the Spirit? For the letter kills, but the Spirit makes life, makes alive. Apoktene, if you may remember, it looks a lot like everybody's first year Greek vocabulary list word, apokteno. And that is indeed actually what this is. This is just a later form of apokteno. And if you look in the apparatus, you'll see that some of the manuscripts read apoktene, which is another way to spell it. So sometimes, you know, Greek words just have different spellings. So the letter kills, but the Spirit gives life. And if you don't know what zoopoie is, just immediately looking at it, you can kind of see how it has the two roots of life and make in there. And that poie is from, you know, poieo. That's, in English, we make a lot of words this way by adding phi on the end, right? So stupefy or vivify here in this case. So, and we get that from the Latin way of doing it. So any questions on anything so far? All righty. We'll keep chugging along here. Verse 7. Eidahe diakonia tu thanatu en gramasin en tetipomene lithois egenethe en doxe hosta me dinasthai atenisai tu suius Israel esta prosopon moiseos diatein doxein doxon tu prosopu autu tain kat argu menein. And then the sentence goes on for quite a bit. So you notice that you've got your little white space in your Greek text there that the editors have printed. It's kind of indicating that Paul is going to shift into a new aspect of his argument. But if the... Now, here's our diakonia friend again. If the ministry, it usually gets translated. I like to translate this word because ministry is kind of fuzzy. I like to translate it the dishing out. So if the dishing out, the ministry of death, and now you're looking for a main verb and you see egenethe, but that is technically not the whole verb. This is one of those. Does anybody remember what it's called when you have a participle and a form of to be or become? Yeah, this is a periphrastic construction. So you've got to read all the way to egenethe to get the full verb. And en tetipomene is a perfect participle middle. And you would guess that for two reasons. One, well, really just one in this case, but you see that reduplication, that tet on the front. This is from tipao, and it means to be imprinted or carved, like if you were carving on a stone. The other way that you can recognize, this is a good trick for learning Greek students, the way that you can recognize perfect participles is because you remember in Greek that the accent always tries to go on verbs and participles. The accent always tries to go three back, and if it can't go three back because the last syllable is long, it'll go two back. Except on perfect participles, the accent always goes two back. Now, I think we'll see an example of this later on, but here, you don't necessarily know that because A is the last syllable, and that's long, which would make the accent two back anyway. But that's a little trick. So, if the ministry of death was, and so take this all together, was carved with letters on stone in glory, so a lot of datives going on there, you can play with them different ways. Hosta. Hosta is a result, and it takes an infinitive, and you negate an infinitive with me. So that, and now we don't know who the subject is yet, so that somebody was not able to look intently at or just look at. That's from Atanidzo. Tus huius Israel, eis ta prosopon Moiseos. Okay, so the subject of an infinitive is always going to be in the accusative case. And there's only one free-hanging accusative noun group in this sentence. So that would be tus huius. So they must be the subject. So that the sons of Israel were not able to stare into the face of Moses on account of the glory of his face. And now we're going to modify glory a little more, which was katargu menein, which was passing away, some people translate, coming to an end. Even if you wanted to translate it loosely, you could go with transitory, not lasting forever, but it is a participle, so literally coming to an end. Any questions on 7? That's kind of a big chunk there. Any questions that you know I can't answer so that you can ask Dr. Gibbs next week, I guess. All right, so verse 8. So that was the but-if, the but-if side of his argument. Verse 8. Hos uhi malon he diakonia tu pneumatos estai in doxe? Question. How? And now this is going to be a question with ooh on the front, which is expecting a positive answer. How will not all the more the ministry, the dishing out of the Spirit, be in glory? How is it not in glory? Estai is present tense. So I think this genitive with diakonia, as with the previous ones, I take them all as objective. This is the delivering of death, the delivering of the Spirit. So, oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, estai is, I don't know what, estin is present tense. I had it right the first time. That's what you get with a substitute teacher. So, these. I think the best way to understand what Paul is talking about, he's talking about the dishing out of things. Dogmatically, we know the law, and we know this from Paul, so it's not exegetically distasteful. The law dishes out death, but the Spirit, life. Any questions on 8? Alrighty. Let's see if we can get through. We might not make it to the end, I guess. Agar te diakonia tes katakriseos doxa, palo malon periseoe he diakonia tes dikaiosines doxe. Again, we're stuck with a lot of datives. For if, and all of these, by the way, these A plus indicatives are just general conditionals, nothing special going on with regards to how probable or anything, it's just general conditions. For if to the ministry of condemnation, glory. So we need a verb. And anytime you need to substitute a verb, your first guess is going to be estin, and that's the right one here. So if glory has is the way that construction goes. Nominative plus estin plus dative equals that the nominative has the dative. So if the ministry, if there is glory to the ministry of condemnation, that is, if the ministry of condemnation has glory, then how much more Paulo comes from a regular adjective, but here it's really functioning as an adverb. How much more does the ministry, the dishing out of righteousness, abound in glory? So again, if the ministry of Moses that brought condemnation had glory attached to it, Moses' face shining, then how much more will the ministry of dishing out righteousness or justification, does it not have glory? Moving on, verse 10. Kaigar u de doxastai ta de doxas menon and tuto to mere henikentes hiper baluses doxes. So this is what I was talking about with these perfect participles. Ta de doxas menon. That accent did not go three back. And that's your clue, aside from the reduplication of the dead on the front, that's a perfect participle. And you get this kaigar, so you've got to kind of translate it. For even, or for also, or just for the glorified thing is not now, right? These are perfect, so they have a present tense sense to them. Is not now glorified, and tuto to mere in this case, in this respect, on account of the hiper ba luces doxes, on account of the superabounding glory. Hyperbolic glory, that's right. So, and let's just take 11 real quick. Agarta katergumenon dia doxes, polo malon ta menon en doxe. For if the coming to an end thing, dia, here I think we need to take dia as with glory. So the dia does not normally work as with, but it's really kind of a development that the grammars will say that this is sort of a dia of circumstance. It's related to how dia can be used to describe the mode, like I wrote through a letter, dia epistolis, and from there, according to my grammar Zerwick, this develops into an accompaniment or circumstance. So the coming to an end one thing with glory, how much the more ta menon from our regular from meno, the remaining thing is in glory. Any questions? I know I went kind of fast there, and I'm definitely not Dr. Gibbs, but he'll be back next week.